RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You can also listen to our broadcast every day on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz, and 11785 kHz.
Hello, welcome back to English Bulletin of RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. In today's edition, we'll present to you our program summary for today. First, we'll bring you our news, followed by news across the country, today in history, highlight of the week, week in review, and news in brief. We'll continue our next program with Indonesian Wonder and Miss Eleni. We'll conclude our program for today with listeners' mailbag. That was our program summary for today. Stand by now for the news.
Voice of Indonesia with the news.
Here is the news read by Rahmana. First, the headlines. Trade Minister Rahmat Gobel affirmed price hike must be 2% at most. Petrolite to be officially sold after Idul Fitri. Now the news in detail. Trade Minister Rahmat Gobel called on traders not to raise the price too high during the past month and days before Idul Fitri this year. However, he affirmed that he would understand if traders want to capitalize on the moments by obtaining more benefits than usual. He said the increase should not be more than 2% from the normal price. Minister Rahman also expressed his worry that if traders manipulate the prices, it would cause high inflation. Based on the monitoring done by the Trade Ministry, the prices of rice, imported soybean, beef, chicken and salad have increased by 0.05 to 12.09%. PT Pertamina plans to sell fuel-tied fertilizer after Idul Fitri before selling it to the market. PT Pertamina plans to test the market by selling fertilizer at 103 General Fuel Filling Station or SPPU throughout Indonesia. Marketing and Commercial Director PT Pertamina Ahmad Bamban in iftar event and the explanation about the Pertamina's readiness ahead of Idul Fitri in Jakarta said that after testing the market, huge sales of fertilizer will be launched, followed to the other fuel station or SPBU spreading in big cities in Indonesia. After that, PT Pertamina will undertake the next stage, namely to nationally campaign the new tight product. According to Bamban, the price per kiloliter of fertilizer is under the price or Pertamax price, but above the premium price. He expects that the site can sell fertilizer throughout Indonesia by the end of 2015. Coordinating Minister for Economic Affairs Sofian Jalil said that the government would keep borrowing money to finance infrastructure development. According to him, the government is not able to bear all the costs of infrastructure development worth around 5,500 trillion rupiah in the next 5 years. He affirmed that it does not matter that the government borrow funds from overseas as long as it used for productive benefit. He also considered that Indonesia is still different from Greece, which is now bankrupt to manage its debt. According to Minister Sofian, Greece is likely to manage its debt for consumption and social interests. Meanwhile, Indonesia is using debt to finance the development. Besides, according to him, Greece's debt ratio is currently nearly 200% of gross domestic product GDP, while Indonesia it is only 26% of GDP. Previously, the government was reminded by a number of people to learn from the Greek that miscalculated when it borrowed funds from the IMF or other international financing institutions. The last item, Presidential State Office has signed a memorandum of understanding with Development and Financial Supervision Board to monitor implementation of prioritized national programs. Luhut Panjaitan, chief of the Presidential Staff, said the board's institutions that are directly under the command of the President would make a synergy in doing verification to the implementation of programs pledged by President Joko Widodo. Luhut said under Memorandum of Understanding, on-the-ground supervision will be done smoothly, as it enables the President's Staff Office and the BPKV to exchange data and information in monitoring the national programs. Luhut also pointed out that the supervision and monitoring that will be done by the two institutions would not be done to evaluate the performance of minister, but to provide correct information to President Joko Widodo. Luhut further said that the President's Staff Office would also give assistance to address barriers in the implementation of every government program. That's news from the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
Listener of Area Reward Service, Voice of Indonesia. Welcome back with me, Steve, in our weekly segment, News from Across the Country, presenting you various interesting events from across the country during the week. Listener, the first news comes from Ambon, Maluku. People in Ambon flocked to Ramadan Chip Market held by Ambon City Administration ahead of Idul Fitri festivity, 1436 Hijriah. Ambon City Administration prepares subsidy up to 100 million rupiah, or about $8,000 for the Chip Market, so that the goods sold in the market are under distributor price. There are 3,000 racks of chicken egg for two locations of Chip Market. The city administration has also anticipated the big number of egg buyers by giving coupons for the people to make a line and avoid stampede. Ambon City Deputy Mayor Sam Latukonsina said when observing the Chip Market that the market aims to ease the burden of the people in meeting their primary needs. It targets the unfortunate to get main needs in affordable prices and adequate number. The second news comes from Balige, North Sumatra. The assessors of Global Geopark Network from the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, or GGN UNESCO, started conducting a research on Lake Toba, North Sumatra, to set Geopark Caldera Toba, or GKT, as the World Geology Heritage Earth Park. According to the head of Toba Samosir Culture and Tourism Service, Ultri Sonlahir, the assessors conducted a series of research on Geopark Caldera Toba to be recognized as the World Geology Heritage with the diversity of geology, biodiversity, and culture, which are still maintained. The field assessment process began on Thursday from Medan to Sipiso-Piso Waterfall Geosite, then Silalahi, Aik Rangat, and Sitiotio in Samosir by using boat. After that, the assessors team visited Sigulati Samosir as Geopark Information Center. It was continued to Batu Parsidangan Huta Sialgan and Batu Gantung in Parapat. Then, they discussed and observed Batak Tebe Silalahi Center Museum in Tobasa. Here, the assessors enjoyed traditional cultural attraction like Tortor, Tumba Dance, and they were introduced to Batak or Native Sumatran Kurga engraving and alphabets. In the end of the visit, the assessors will observe Sipinsur, Humbah Khas Regency, and go back to Medan through Silangit Airport, Tapanuli Utara Regency. Listener, we end this edition with the news from Teluk Bintuni Regency, West Sumatra Province. The region of Teluk Bintuni Regency, West Sumatra Province, Alphonse Manibuy, said last Wednesday that in the past 2 years, the regency has been able to eradicate malaria, the deadly disease in Papua. He revealed that making Teluk Bintuni Regency as a free malaria area is not easy. It needs hard work from all people in the regency. Teluk Bintuni Regency Administration worked together with LNG Tangguh Gas Company to run malaria-free program, so that now 99% of people in the regency are free from malaria. Alphonse Manibuy stated that only 1% of people in Teluk Bintuni Regency who are still hit by malaria, and they live in the remote area far from the capital city. But they have been handled by the health service. The region said that the capital of Teluk Bintuni Regency is free from malaria, so that if someone is found to have malaria, that person is infected from other areas in Bintuni. Listener, that ends news from across the country from Area Reward Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. I'm Steve. Thank you for listening.
Today in History. A compilation of several important events happened on this date in the past.
This is RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta with Today in History, a regular segment which brings back people and events from this date in the past as recorded in history. Let's begin with July 12, 1947, the Indonesian National Cooperative Day. Cooperative was introduced in Indonesia by R. Arya Wirya Atmaja in Purwokerto, Central Java in 1896. He established a credit cooperative with the aim of helping people heavily in debt with loan sharks. The cooperative then grew rapidly and eventually imitated by Budi Utomo and Islamic trade unions. In 1942, Japan occupied Indonesia. Japan then established a cooperative called Kumiai. After Indonesian independence, on July 12, 1947, the cooperative movement in Indonesia held the first cooperative congress in Tasikmalaya, West Java. The date was then designated as the Day of Indonesian Cooperatives. Turning to the event July 12, 1979, the independence of the Republic of Kiribati. Republic of Kiribati, formerly part of the Gilbert Island, is an island nation located in the Pacific Ocean. In 1892, Gilbert Islands became a protectorate of the United Kingdom together with the adjacent Ellis Islands. Both later became a colony in 1916 and eventually became autonomous in 1971. In 1943, the Battle of Tarawak in Kiribati took place in the Kiribati capital city on the island of Tarawa. In 1978, the Ellis Islands became the independent state called Tuvalu, and Kiribati too became independent on July 12, 1979. We end by July 12, 1997, the birth of Malala Yousafzai. Malala Yousafzai was born on July 12, 1997. She is a Pakistani activist for female education and the youngest ever Nobel Prize laureate. She is known mainly for human rights advocacy for education and for women in her native Swat Valley in northwest Pakistan, where the local Taliban had at times banned girls from attending school. Yousafzai's advocacy has since grown into an international movement. She was the winner of Pakistan's first National Youth Peace Prize and the recipient of the 2013 Sakharov Prize. In July that year, she spoke at the headquarters of the United Nations to call for worldwide access to education, and in October, the government of Canada announced its intention that its parliament confer honorary Canadian citizenship upon Yousafzai. In February 2014, she was nominated for the World Children's Prize in Sweden. In May, Malala Yousafzai was granted an honorary doctorate by the University of King's College in Halifax. Later in 2014, she was announced as the co-recipient of the 2014 Nobel Peace Prize for her struggle against the suppression of children and young people and for the right of all children to education. At age 17, Yousafzai is the youngest ever Nobel Prize laureate. On July 12, 2013, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon set the birthday of Malala as the day of an international commemoration. This is intended to promote education for all children in the world. Well, that was Today in History of RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. I'm Anna Trijayakasih.
Today in History, a compilation of several important events happened on this date in the past.
The Week Spotlight presents Top Issue of the Week.
Listener, this is Highlight of the Week from RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, with me, Steve. The meeting between the Indonesian President Jokowi and businessmen, academicians, as well as the Indonesian Economists Association, or ISEI, becomes our today's focus. Listener, last Thursday at Jakarta Convention Center, President Joko Widodo met the Indonesian businessmen and academicians to answer the current global challenge. The meeting was initiated by the Indonesian Economists Association, or ISEI. The two-hour meeting began with an elaboration and data from ISEI about the economic condition in Indonesia that was responded by the president. When opening the meeting, ISEI chairman Darmin Nasution said that ISEI urged the government to take policies soon to return the economic growth, which raises hope in the future. In his view, the economic growth that has been achieved does not really give enough hope for the future development. Darmin stated that there are four main problems to answer, namely the slowing economic growth, price and main commodities availability, rupiah stability, and public account. Meanwhile, the Indonesian top businessman, Sudamek Agung Waspodo Sunyoto from Garuda Food Question Logistics in Indonesia. According to him, behind logistic issue, the urgent need to solve is coordination. In the meantime, lecturer at the School of Economics from the University of Indonesia, Lana Solistianingsi, asked about the government's policy about the budget use. According to Lana, budget absorption is still low. He added that this budget absorption is the classic problem of the state budget or APBN from year to year in the first and second trimester. Then it increases in the third and fourth trimester. Responding to the data and suggestion from the Indonesian Economists Association, or ISEI, President Jokowi explained the concept of growth engine that his administration does. The president admitted tendency to pessimism on the slowing economy, but he thinks it is common in the transition era to turn back the economic growth based on the consumption, reproduction, and investment. In the transition era to reach the new growth engine, he said that Indonesia will be in difficult indeed, but it should be done to make Indonesia stable with industry and production basis. According to the president, it needs management culture revolution in the transition era to face exchange rate and import price, including pricing fair, making cost and design efficient, as well as change production and distribution system. Listener, that's Anne's highlight of the week from RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
Here is a Wheat in Review, read by Mona. It is presenting some important events occurring during the second week of July. A researcher from the Indonesian Study and Advocacy Center, FAS Indonesia, Taufik Riyadi, said that the new leaders of Corruption Eradication Commission, KPK, must prioritize conducting thorough investigation of Bank Indonesia's liquidity support BLBI cases. He also said it was hoped that the KPK selection committee could choose candidates for leaders who are ready to put priority on the thorough investigation of all cases, such as Bank Indonesia liquidity support cases that have drawn public attention. Taufik further said the ongoing selection of candidates for the Corruption Eradication Commission leadership position could be used as a momentum to choose the best commissioners for the anti-graft body. Indonesian Vice President Yusuf Kalla chaired a meeting to discuss infrastructure development plans in Jakarta on last Monday. He stated in the meeting attended by several ministers that the government must improve planning and scheduling. Among those present in the meeting were Coordinating Minister for Economic Affairs Sofian Jalil, Coordinating Minister for Maritime Affairs Indroyono Susilo, Research, Technology and Higher Education Minister Muhammad Nasir, and Public Works and Housing Minister Basuki Hadi Mulyono. The meeting's agenda also included the working budget and executors of infrastructure development. Vice President Yusuf Kalla also held a meeting to discuss foreign loans planned worth $38 billion US for infrastructure development, also known as Project Blue Book 2015-2019 of the National Development Plan Agency, BAPENAS. Venezuela continues to strengthen bilateral relations with Indonesia. This was stated by Venezuelan Charter First Darwin Toffer in an interview with RRI World Service on last Tuesday. According to Darwin, to strengthen bilateral relations with Indonesia, Venezuelan government has appointed an ambassador to Indonesia, Gladys Urbaneja. Her placement in Indonesia is only waiting for approval from Indonesian government.
Interés de Venezuela en seguir profundizando las relaciones bilaterales con Indonesia.
The desire of Venezuela is to continue to deepen bilateral relations with Indonesia, which is always based on the principle of mutual respect and pay attention to the noble principles of Bandung. With that goal, our government has designated Ambassador Gladys Urbaneja, and we are waiting for approval so that she can take her place and continues to work to bring bilateral relations between the two countries to higher level. Furthermore, Darwin said the potential of trade relations between the two countries is very large. To maximize the trade potential between the two countries, according to Darwin, both the Venezuelan embassy in Jakarta and the Indonesian embassy in Venezuela conduct regular meetings with entrepreneurs and industrialists that have submitted their attention to establish trade relations. The trade potential of the two countries, according to Darwin, is to generate trade and investment flows. Darwin added, many sectors have not been maximized, but the cooperation between the two countries can prioritize the petrochemical, agro-industry, and pharmaceutical sectors. Indonesian President Joko Widodo has asked ministries and institutions to work together to develop border areas to its maximum function. In his opening remarks at the limited working meeting on International Cargo Terminal Development Plan in Jakarta on last Tuesday, President Joko Widodo instructed his ministers to optimize border function and to facilitate goods of export and import activities. We hoped the borders can be used properly by the people as well as to serve export and import activities. Furthermore, President Joko Widodo also said that the government should establish a modern managed traditional market in border areas in West Kalimantan and Papua provinces. The president also instructed the Indonesian police to conduct intensive surveillance and combat every illegal activity throughout all border control posts. Besides installing thermal scanner to detect MERS, the Minister of Health will intensify socialization to prevent the spread of Middle East Respiratory Syndrome of Coronavirus MERS, COV. Health Minister Nila Mulud said in Jakarta on last Wednesday that her ministry will socialize MERS, COV aboard the plane. Furthermore, Minister Nila said it has coordinated with the Minister of Transportation related to the socialization aboard the plane.
Semua nanti tentang berita-berita MERS coronavirus ini akan masuk misalnya di pesawat terbang.
All about information in regard to MERS coronavirus will be socialized aboard the plane. We would give stickers, leaflet about the information. However, I admit that this would be really hard. Why? Because most of the pilgrims are old people. They are about 70 to 80 years old. We will give simple, rapid information and force them to wear a mask. Minister Nila added her ministry has been providing isolation room at the airport arrival because the majority of arrivals and departures from abroad are by plane. Minister of Health also distributed masks to the people who will go to the countries with MERS epidemics such as South Korea and the Middle East. Indonesian government through the National Counterterrorism Agency BNPT is conducting the radicalization program as an effort to change the attitudes and the outlook of the fundamental groups that are considered too hard to be soft, tolerant, pluralistic, moderate, and liberal. The head of the BNPT, Saud Usman Nasution, to the media in Jakarta on last Wednesday, said that the radicalization program is conducted by inviting the scholars from the Middle East as a reference of the terrorists who had been caught in Indonesia. Although the Indonesian scholars have the same quality, even better than scholars from the Middle East.
Program kita di Indonesia, radikalisasi ini.
Our programs in Indonesia, the radicalization first, we call it the rehabilitation program. To the terrorists who had been caught in prison, we invent approaches, dialogue. We bring the scholars, both local and from the Middle East, because it happened to our culture. Except the scholar from the Middle East are the best, but actually it is not inferior to our scholars in Indonesia. But we follow it, and then they also refer to the verses of Al-Quran and Hadith. Furthermore, Saud Usman Nasution explained the radicalization program is also done by translating the books of the former terrorist leaders and to invite them into the prison to explain to the new terrorists who has been caught about the contents of the book. Moreover, Saud Usman added that the terrorists who are in prison are currently given training of entrepreneurship so they can be an intervener after being released from prison. The Indonesian Institute for Empowerment Society is in collaboration with Japan ASEAN Integrated Fund and witnessed by BNPT and the Minister of Foreign Affairs, has launched two important books on last Wednesday, July 8, 2015, written by Dr. Abdul Manumt Monet from Egypt, entitled Dalil al-Harakat al-Islamiyah al-Mirsaiyah, or The Guide to Islamic Movement in Egypt, and Murajat Jihadin, or To Radicalize the Jihadist Groups, and attended by the author of the book. Indonesia and 9 other ASEAN member countries will welcome the ASEAN Economic Community AC 2015, which will come into force on December 31, 2015. In ASEAN Economic Community, products, services, investment, labor, and capital will free flow with the principle of a free market. Director for ASEAN Economic Cooperation of Indonesian Foreign Ministry, Ina Krishnamurti, while giving an explanation at the Minister of Foreign Affairs Indonesia in Jakarta on Tuesday, said that AEC is about strengthening the competitiveness among the ASEAN countries guided by four main pillars instead of trade liberalization.
MEA sendiri sebetulnya bukan mengenai liberalisasi perdagangan.
AEC is actually not trade liberalization. Its focus is on strengthening the competitiveness of each ASEAN country and ASEAN as a whole. AEC consists of four pillars. The first is single market or free market, but behind that there is also single production base. The second pillar is the competitiveness of the AEC. The keywords are competitiveness and the competitive economy area. The third one is equitable and fair economic development. The fourth pillar is the integration to the global economy. Furthermore, Ina Krishnamurti said if the AEC has competitiveness, all ASEAN member countries can be integrated with the global economy. One of the goals to establish the ASEAN Economic Community is driven by external and internal development of the region. On the external side, Asia is predicted to become the new economic power, supported by India, China, and ASEAN countries. Based on the World Bank report in 2014, which uses projection, power parity or BBB, and international dollar, ASEAN economics accounted for 6% of global GDP after NAFTA accounted for 20%. The European Union 17%, China 16%, and India 7%. Indonesia is one of countries which is experiences earthquake disaster, but the earthquake cannot be predicted when it happens. It was stated by Chairman of Data Information and Public Relations of National Disaster Mitigation Agency BNPT, Sutopo Purwonugroho, to media in Jakarta last Thursday afternoon. He said the government keeps on socializing to mitigate the disaster to people so that they are ready to face the disaster when it happens.
Kita gempa sampai sekarang belum bisa memprediksi kapan terjadi secara pasti. Potensi ada.
In spite of potential, we cannot predict when earthquake happens. Through trainings and socialization, people could anticipate it related to the seismograph and communication network. People could know 5 minutes after earthquake what to do. Previously, with tsunami in Aceh, we couldn't do that. Now, with early warning system, people can be informed in 5 minutes. Because earthquake cannot be predicted, we inform the people what they should do if it happens. Sutopo Purwonugroho also said National Disaster Mitigation Agency BNPB keeps cooperating with many countries to mitigate disasters such as United States, Russia, Japan, China, and some ASEAN countries. The mitigation exercises are implemented with civilians and military personnel. Indonesia Minister of Social Affairs said 25 million Indonesian people belong to vulnerable groups in disasters. Director General of Protection and Social Security, Minister of Social Affairs, Andi Zainal Abidin Dulun, said Indonesia with 254 million people ranks the fourth largest population country in the world after China, India, and United States.
Dari data tersebut, didapat asumsi 10% di antara jumlah penduduk ini adalah masyarakat rentan.
From this data, we assume 10% of the populations are vulnerable people. Then, no less than 25 million people in Indonesia are vulnerable communities. We see the example in the eruption of Mount Sinabung, which is still ongoing. Mount Sinabung in Karun, North Sumatra, has a population of 3,150 heads of household, and 10,604 million people. Among them, 5,466 are women and 1,823 comprise of the elderly, pregnant women, infants, and toddlers. It shows the largest number of vulnerable groups in disaster situation that need special attention. And the edit, up to now, the government continues to strive to accelerate the recipient of assistance, such as through the Family Welfare Card Program, Healthy Indonesian Card, and Indonesian Smart Card. The three card programs are intended not only for the general public, but also the people in shelters. According to Law No. 24, 2007, vulnerable groups consist of infants, children, pregnant and lactating women, persons with disabilities, and the elderly. Based on data from the National Disaster Management Agency, in 2014, there were 1,559 disasters in Indonesia. The disaster has killed 490 and affected the lives of 2 million people. Thousands of people have been displaced and many of them have lost their families, homes, and belongings. Indonesia is a country prone to disaster. Rosilawati Anggraheni, National Program Officer for the Humanitarian Aid Department, the United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, Indonesia said that under the law, Indonesia has prioritized vulnerable groups to obtain assistance in disasters. Vulnerable groups such as pregnant women and adolescents require special treatment when staying at the shelters and receiving basic and health services. According to Rosilawati, various efforts had been made by the government to protect the vulnerable groups during the disaster, but those efforts still need to be improved.
Di Undang-Undang Kebencanaan nomor 24 tahun 2007,
in Indonesia alone, in Law on Disaster number 24-2007, there is a chapter for vulnerable groups. It says that in disaster condition, there are pregnant women, breastfeeding women, children under 5, people with disabilities, and the elderly. In the law, those people belong to vulnerable groups. So in fact, reports had been done, but we still have to always emphasize on the needs that are still difficult to meet. UNFPA Indonesia has worked with various social institutions such as Social Ministry, the Ministry of Health, the National Population and Family Planning, and the National Disaster Management Agency to protect vulnerable groups in disaster situations. In commemoration of the World Population Day, an effort to increase attention to vulnerable groups is done in the theme Protecting Vulnerable Population in Emergencies. Listener, that was Week in Review, presented by Rahmana.
Voice of Indonesia, keeping dignity alive.
Here is news in brief read by Rahmana. Trade Minister Ahmad Gobel called on traders not to raise the price too high during the festive month and the days before Idul Fitri this year. PT Pertamina plans to sell fuel-tied Pertalite after Idul Fitri. Before selling into the market, PT Pertamina plans to test the market by selling Pertalite at 103 General Fuel Filling Station or SPBU throughout Indonesia. Coordinating Minister for Economy Affairs Sofian Jalil said that the government would keep borrowing money to finance infrastructure development. According to him, the government is not able to bear all the costs of infrastructure development worth 5,500 trillion rupiah in the next 5 years. Presidential State Office has signed a Memorandum of Understanding with Development and Financial Supervision Board, BPKB, to monitor the implementation of prioritized national programs. That's news in brief from the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
This is Indonesia. Here is Indonesia. This is Indonesia. You will be delighted to see the beauty of Indonesia for free by taking part in Wonderful Indonesia Quiz 2015. Answer the following questions. 1. When and where was the independence of Indonesia proclaimed? 2. Who read the proclamation text of Indonesia's independence on the radio for the first time? A. Yusuf Ronodipuro. B. Abdul Rahman Saleh. 3. When is RRI's anniversary? 4. Mention 3 tourism places in Indonesia that you want to visit and give the reasons. 5. How do you listen to RRI World Service programs and give the reasons? 6. What programs do you like most? 7. What are your suggestions for Voice of Indonesia's programs? 8. What is your opinion about the website of Voice of Indonesia? Send your answer along with your brief bio data as well as copy of your passport or passport number and its expired date to voiquiz2015@gmail.com. voiquiz2015@gmail.com before August 11, 2015. You may be the lucky one to get the main prize, which is coming to Indonesia.
You're still tuned to the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta to the frequency of 9525 kHz. You can also listen to our audio streaming at www.voi.co.id. Here's our next program, Indonesian Wonder and Miss Lenny.
Let's listen to various information of Indonesian arts and culture in a daily segment of Indonesian Wonder.
This is RRI World Service Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta with Indonesian Wonder, a special program introducing Indonesian tourism, including places of interest, culture and tradition, also Indonesian cuisine. Today, I will take you to Dullah Museum in Solo, Central Java Province. Besides via shortwave, you can also listen to this program via live streaming at www.voi.co.id. Dullah Museum, located in Solo, Central Java, can be said as a hidden treasure with a collection of hundreds of paintings by renowned Indonesian artist Dullah. Dullah is one of Indonesian maestros who was born on September 19, 1919. He was known also as a revolutionary painter because through his paintings he depicted the Indonesian struggle for independence back in 1945. He even staged an exhibition of his work depicting battle scenes during the Indonesian War of Independence against the Dutch colonial troops. The legendary artist built a house in Solo in an area of 2,000 square meters and set it up as a residence, studio, and a museum named Dullah Museum to keep his works and creations and of other Indonesian artists. It is located precisely on Dr. Cipto Mangunkusumo Street No. 15 in Solo. Dullah is also known as a palace artist because he was assigned by the Indonesian First President Sukarno to take care of many art objects in the presidential palace. For more than 10 years since the early 1950s, his duties include repairing damaged paintings and taking part in the preparation of the book of President Sukarno's collection. Upon entering the building with Balinese culture, you'll see the main part of the museum where there is a statue of Dullah sitting back while crossing his leg. The statue is right in front of the painting of a number of freedom fighters who are cheering up while lifting up their guns. Still in that room, there are a number of face painting, especially close relatives as such his wife and son. While next to the room, there are the work of a number of other quite famous painters such as Afandi and Sujoyono, kept safe in a special place. According to the story, Dullah indeed learned to paint from those two figures. Formerly in this room, there was also a painting of the famous painter Raden Saleh, but now the painting is kept somewhere else because it had been stolen once, though could be retrieved. In the center room, you will see hundreds of paintings by Dullah hanging on the wall, mostly of a person's face. It is not clear whose face is, as generally they are simply titled, for example, girl, grandpa, or grandma. In this room, there is also some paintings of the National Palace, scenery in Bali, up to scenes of the War of Independence. While the back room is used to store paintings by Dullah's student, as well as various art objects such as sculpture and ceramics. There are some quiet beautiful paintings, the works of his students, such as one by Muhammad Toha. The painting was created by Muhammad Toha at the age of 10 years. The museum that holds approximately 900 pieces of paintings is temporarily open to the public with a booking system. This is all done for the sake of security. Therefore, visitors should be limited and selected. Anybody who wants to get in must be selected first, and to get into the museum, visitor is free of charge. Visitors are only given about 1 hour to see the paintings in this museum. The oldest painting in Dullah Museum was made in 1939, while the latest is the work of Dullah made in 1993. The museum is now being repaired, especially its security system. And when all is ready, Dullah Museum will reopen to public with the operation time as other museums. That was today's edition of Indonesian Wonder, featuring Dullah Museum in Solo, Central Java. If you are an art lover and happen to be in Solo, you definitely must take time to visit Dullah Museum that holds so many independent struggle themed paintings. So until tomorrow with another segment of Indonesian Wonder.
Miscellany on Indonesia, a segment featuring various actual information.
This is RRI World Service Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta with Miscellany, a regular segment featuring various aspects of Indonesia, including art and culture, customs and traditions, technology and environment, even lifestyle. Today's edition will be discussing National Cooperatives Day 2015. So stay tuned in RRI World Service Voice of Indonesia. Besides via shortwave, you can also listen to this program through www.voi.co.id. On July 12, 1947, the cooperative movement in Indonesia organized the first cooperative congress in Tasikmalaya, West Java. The movement was a combination of indigenous cooperatives throughout Indonesia, which have developed since the Japanese occupation time and the early years of the Indonesian independence. The congress established SOCRI, or Central Cooperative Organization of Indonesia. During the Second Congress in Bandung in 1953, the name was changed to Dekopin. Since then, July the 12th has been designated as the National Cooperative Day, celebrated every year. Cooperative is a pillar of the Indonesian economy. Indonesian Minister of Cooperatives and Small and Medium Enterprises, Anak Agung Gede Ngurah Puspayoga, said cooperative is a mandate of the Constitution of 1945. For that reason, the economy is structured as a joint venture company based on the principle of kinship, and the appropriate business is cooperatives. The National Cooperatives Day 2015 was held in Kupang, East Nusa Tenggara Province. The reason for choosing the city, apart from the readiness of the government officials there, the city is also noted for its support for the cooperative development in its budget.
Kooperasinya bagus, keberpihakan pemerintah dengan...
Cooperative will be good if the budget support is. There is a cooperative named Swatisari. I was there. Every day there are 500 people borrowing and saving money there. If the cooperative is good, the society must be disciplined too. The more members of the cooperatives are, the better it is. It means the cooperative's management and the managers too are good. Many cooperatives in Kupang are good. Head of Job Training Center, the Department of Cooperatives and Small and Medium Enterprises in East Nusa Tenggara Province, Dominic Ancis, said to celebrate the Cooperatives Day 2015, several activities such as dance competition were held, followed by cooperative members throughout the province. Previously, a cooperatives exhibition called Expo Harkopnas was held, followed by 25 provinces in Indonesia. The National Cooperatives Day 2015 was commemorated with the theme Strengthen Cooperative as a Pillar of the Indonesian Economy. Cooperatives serve as a platform and means for even distribution of public welfare. Therefore, the Ministry of Cooperatives and Small and Medium Enterprises is targeting to build quality cooperatives.
Ya, targetnya kalau kita ngomong kooperasi, ya kooperasi yang berkualitas.
Yes, the target. If we talk about it, yes, it is quality cooperatives, small medium enterprises. But how? We train them institutionally so that the cooperatives will be strong. Then we'll give them access to financing. Without that, they cannot thrive as well. Minister Puspayoga said there are many good cooperatives but are still less exposed and promoted. He is optimistic that the number of quality cooperatives in Indonesia will continue to increase. Well, that was Miss Leni. Until tomorrow with another interesting topic.
Meet again tomorrow with another miscellany on Indonesia.
Hello, listener, wherever you are, welcome back to Listener's Mailbag, a weekly segment in which your letters and emails are acknowledged. In this segment, we'll also play some Indonesian music. Well, listener, we would like to thank you, our dear listeners, wherever you are, who have sent your letters or emails containing your reception reports on our broadcast. And now let's start answering your letters or emails. First, I would like to read an email sent by Riaz Ahmad Khan in Pakistan. On July the 6th, 2015, he was listening to our Exotic Indonesia program between Voice of Indonesia and also RRI Bukit Tinggi. He is very interested in West Sumatra food. He told that in Pakistan, the people there also eat very spicy food, like in West Sumatra. Hello, Mr. Riaz Ahmad Khan. Thank you very much for your email. We also thank you because you have shared what Pakistan people like during Ramadan month, namely samosas and pakoras. Well, Rias, if you come to Indonesia, don't forget to try our special dish in Ramadan, namely kolak. And it is very delicious, of course. Well, Rias, we are looking forward to receiving your next email. Thank you very much. We will reply an email from Mansongi Manimo Simao in Vietnam. He was listening to our broadcast on June 26, 2015 through our website www.voi.co.id. He is a counselor to Angola's embassy in Hanoi, Vietnam. Hello, Mr. Mansongi Manimo Simao. Thank you very much for your attention and also your appreciation on our broadcast. We are very glad because although you are very busy, you still can monitor our broadcast. And we hope you always keep listening to our radio and also please give your reception reports on our broadcast. Thank you. Well, listener, now we continue to reply an email from Rajendra Kumar. He told that he listened to and likes our program. Hello, Mr. Rajendra Kumar. Thank you for your email dated June 21st, 2015. Is this your first time to listen to our radio? If yes, welcome to the club. We are glad because you want to share your time to monitor our broadcast. And we hope you can hear our program every day. Please tell us your most favorite segment of our program. Also, please send your reception report as well. Thank you. And special for you, we will play a beautiful song from Sulis entitled Teman Biasa. Let's check it out.
Jadi yang bukan-bukan. Maaf saja aku tak mau. Meski kau tinggal aku, tak mengapa bagiku. Yeah.
Well, listener, that was another hit by Sulis, and unfortunately, we have to sign off. We appreciate your reception reports on our broadcast. Please send your letters to Voice of Indonesia English Service, PO Box 1157, Jakarta 10110, Indonesia. I repeat again, Voice of Indonesia English Service, PO Box 1157, Jakarta 10110, Indonesia. Or you can also send your email to info@voi.co.id. info@voi.co.id or to english@voi.co.id, english@voi.co.id. Don't forget to visit and also like our fan pages on Facebook, Voice of Indonesia, and also Voice of Indonesia Era Reward Service, or follow our Twitter @voi_indonesia. You can also join our Instagram account, voice_of_indonesia. Listener, we are organizing Wonderful Indonesia Quiz 2015, and we have also aired the questions, and you can join the quiz by answering the questions. Who knows, you are one of the lucky winners to win the grand prize, namely visiting Indonesia for free. And for further information, you can visit www.voi.go.id. You don't have to worry if you don't have passports. Just send your answers. We'll provide additional prizes for those who cannot win the first prize. Don't forget to send your entry. And the quiz will end on August the 10th, 2015. The first prize winners will be invited to come to Indonesia in September 2015. So hurry up before the quiz ends. Well, listener, to conclude our segment, we will play another song from Sulis, Tuntunlah Hamba, or in English means Please Guide Me. And on behalf of Voice of Indonesia's management and staff, I would like to say Happy Eid to all Muslims around the world. I'm Ania Sana. Thank you for listening, and we'll meet again next week in Listener's Mailbag. Bye-bye.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You can also listen to our broadcast every day on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz and 11785 kHz. Send your criticism and suggestions to en.voi.co.id or send your letter to Voice of Indonesia, RRI World Service, Jalan Medan Merdeka Barat, No. 4 and 5, Jakarta, or PO Box 1157, Jakarta 10011, Indonesia. And join us on Facebook, Voice of Indonesia, and Twitter, VoI Indonesia.